Our first reading from the prophet Nehemiah describes a critical moment in a long 100-year process. In 586, the Jewish people were taken to slavery in Babylon. In 536, they returned to Jerusalem. By 515, they had rebuilt the temple. And in the incident described in our first reading, all of the temple courtyard and the grounds had been completed. And they had a big festival. They brought all the people together. They read the law. They had food and drink. And we hear the prophet speak to this group on this important day. And he said, "Do not be sad and do not weep. Go eat rich food and drink sweet drinks and allot portions to those who had nothing prepared. Do not be saddened by this day, for rejoicing in the Lord must be your strength." When was the last time you rejoiced? Rejoice is an odd word. We all know what it means. But how often do you use it in speech to describe your actions? To rejoice in the biblical sense is not the same as what in our culture we would call partying or being boisterous. Similarly, to experience joy in the biblical sense is not the same as what our culture calls happiness. In our culture, partying, being boisterous, and being happy have an externalized quality, manifested in action and in word. Rejoicing, on the other hand, especially rejoicing because one feels joy, arises from our hearts as we realize deep and moving realities interiorly. We can, of course, share our joy and rejoice with others, but it does not look like partying and American-style happiness. So we rejoice and feel joy at the birth of a child, at the prospect of marrying someone we love, at the sight of a dawn or a landscape, on reading a favorite poem, or hearing beautiful music, or recalling rich experiences of our past. In the first reading, the Jewish people's rejoicing has the interior, reflective quality of realizing that the suffering of their ancestors in exile in Babylon is over, that the temple is rebuilt, that the temple grounds are complete, and that now they can, at the very epicenter of their communal religious lives, believe that the hope of the Messiah the Mosaic Law offers is real. In a parallel sense, in today's gospel, Jesus is clearly hoping that his reading of the law and the prophets to the people of his own era in the synagogue in Nazareth will give rise to a similar joy, especially as they encounter him and experience him as the Messiah. Like the people in Jerusalem and the people in the synagogue, we are gathered in this place to hear the Jewish law and the prophets, and also to hear Christian scripture. So I want to quote Nehemiah to you again and say, "Do not be sad. Rejoicing in the Lord must be our strength." Like the Jewish people, we may all have memories of our past or present suffering that make the prospect of rejoicing or being joyful unsettling or even impossible. The paradox is that in God's economy, to rejoice in the midst of past and present suffering can bring us God's hope as we discover what is hopeful in what God has done for us. Rejoicing in the Lord is our strength, Nehemiah says. But you may say to me, how can we have hope? How can we rejoice when there's so much suffering, so much dysfunction in our world? Between the bishops and the politicians, how can we have hope? What is God doing that I should have hope? Again, I say to you, this is the paradox. Our rejoicing in what God has done for us and through us and promises to do for us and through us, even in the midst of dysfunction, opens us to yet more of God's gift of strength and joy here today in this Eucharist. God works for us and through us as we use the unique spiritual gifts that complement the talents and abilities God has given us. In today's second reading, St. Paul uses the parts of the human body to indicate our interrelatedness. Later in the same chapter, 1 Corinthians 12, he names another feature of our interrelatedness, the unique endowment of the gifts of the Spirit that each of us possesses. I encourage you to read this chapter and name your own unique gifts. We then pray that the Lord will use our gifts, and then we can watch to see how he uses these gifts in our daily lives. Oddly enough, we don't always see the actual productivity of our gifts. Those of us who preach have learned to live with not knowing exactly how our homilies affect our listeners. Some people have said the halftime of a homily is 20 minutes. But from some time to time, we can be surprised. You who are parents will understand this as you engage with your children. The same for teachers with students, coaches with athletes, Jesuit priests with parishioners. This is why we must have faith and allow God to surprise us. God surprised me recently. I want to tell you this story. It is about me, but it's not about me. It's about us. It's about the kind of community we are and the way we serve the world. On January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany, my homily paralleled this one, Finding Hope Amidst Dysfunction. A parishioner approached me after Mass and asked if he could help me spread the word about hope. I said, yes, of course. So on January 9th, he inserted my homily into the Congressional Record and sent me a note I received yesterday that read, "Dear Ben, thank you. We all needed to hear this." It was signed Senator Patrick Leahy. In what part of your life are you sad? Rejoice, because the Lord is our strength. In what part of your life are you weeping? Rejoice, because the Lord is our strength. In what part of your life do you lack hope? Rejoice, because the Lord is our strength. So I encourage you to go to McKenna Hall after Mass. Eat rich foods like donuts. Drink sweet drinks like coffee, but not too sweet. Be impressed at the newly installed timeline of the parish, and tell others what God has done for you this past week. Rejoice and share your hope with one another, and then share that hope with the wider world. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad.